Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Are you ready?
I am.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. We are back. My name is Alex Croson.
My name is Casey Clapp. I'm here sitting across from Alex Croson.
Wow, and by virtue of that, I am sitting across from Casey Clapp.
That's true. For one, there is another.
For one, there is another. Hi, Casey.
Good day, Alex. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
It's great. Thanks for holding down the fort in my absence.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I'm a good fort holder.
You are. You very much are.
Casey, we have spent the last 2 weeks AFK, as they say. Oh, come on.
No, you told me this.
Come
it's internet lingo. It means away from computer, but it comes from Afrikaans.
That's right.
Yes.
What's on a computer that starts with K?
Keyboard.
Yes.
Ah, that's right. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
You have been riding your bike like a mad lad across the state of Iowa.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I did.
In the great race of Ragbri.
It is only a ride. It is not a race.
Excuse me.
Thank you. You are excused. Try that again.
No. Did I tell you my theory on Ragbri being Scottish?
No, tell us.
It just sounds very Scottish to me. That's as far as the theory goes.
Ragbri sounds like a
Scottish warrior Ragbri or something.
Oh, yeah. That would be kind of fun, wouldn't it?
From the ancient times.
Yeah, yeah. Hold on. Call Ragbri.
Yeah.
And then he comes in and like take care of things. Yeah.
In a strike of lightning.
Yeah. Okay. See, that sounds good. It's very Viking-ish also.
Oh yeah, Ragbri.
Which I guess Scottish and Vikings, they're all kind of, they're all of a similar thing at some point.
The Northern Europeans.
Yeah, in fact, a lot of times, well, we don't need to get into it. There's podcasts about history I could recommend.
Yeah.
And it's very fun. The Viking age and like the revisionist history that's going on with it. Everyone was like, yeah, Vikings, they came and they pillaged. And everyone's like, well, I mean, it was a little bit different than that. And like the how it came about and like the genetics of like specifically Northern Europe along the coast and the UK Isles, if you will. Very curious. All about it.
Interesting.
So Scottish and Vikings got a lot in common.
Wow.
Sometimes literally kin.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first, everyone.
While you
there
were...
There is nowhere else.
Nobody's ever talked about this.
No one has. There's not... No, yeah. Someone's going to be like, oh, I never thought about that. Oh, my God. Anyway.
Oh, boy. You know, while you were riding, not racing, your bike across Iowa, correct. I was suffering from a bout of COVID.
That's right. How are you feeling?
Feeling better.
Jeez.
And then I got really into Buddhism in the meantime.
COVID does that.
You know what? I've seen it a million times. Yeah. So many people I know who got COVID, they come out on the other end with their heads shaved, wearing orange robes.
Now, wouldn't that be kind of a fun cultural thing if, in fact, COVID, like there's all the conspiracies about COVID.
Right.
And then at the end of it, everyone's like, it's actually a Buddhist conversion tool. They spread it around so they could get people to convert.
It's chemical warfare put on by the Buddhists.
Those Buddhists, they're just so casual.
Yeah. Casey, speaking of Buddhism, I wanted to start today's episode and I just jogged my own memory with a quick story of something I did after our last episode. Which was a discussion of a broad, sweeping, uneducated discussion of Buddhism.
Yes. Okay.
Where we talked about the Bodhi tree.
I was going to say this is the Bodhi tree we're referring to. Yeah.
And you said, Alex, you're sort of getting into that, and I was like, oh yeah, sort of. And I was like, what can I do to really like commit even a little bit to learning about Buddhism?
Yeah.
So I went to a Buddhist temple.
Yes, you said that you wanted to say this.
Okay. Yes, I went to a Saturday service at a Buddhist temple.
Okay.
And it was wild.
Yeah, what happened?
Well, I went in.
Okay.
And immediately a woman came up to me and she was like, is this your first time? It's like, am I that white?
Oh, God, that's so funny. Is this your first time?
She just knew. I probably looked like a deer in headlights walking around. But I said yes. And she said, we're taking a 10-minute break, but when we come back, just do what I tell you to do.
Nice.
She said it not unkindly.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Very much like, I will take you under my wing.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, exactly. I think she's in charge of like all the annoying white people who come in looking for an experience, you know?
I see. So like the tourists of these kind of religious places.
The
perhaps.
Buddhism tourists.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was really interesting. There was a lot of chanting of mantras.
Yeah.
Very quickly, the tempo of these things was very fast, and she would come by and point at the sheet that I was looking at and go,
wow.
And I'd be like, the moment you step away, I'm going to lose my place, but thank you so much.
Thank you.
And then there was some walking around to three different kind of shrines.
Really?
And I had to light a thing of incense and put it in a little sand cup.
Okay.
This is probably so insulting to anyone who knows what these things are called.
Oh, no. See, I think it would be insulting if you knew and actively decided not to say it. Rather than like, I can't remember any of these things. It's my first time.
Right.
I'm just trying to do it. Yeah.
It's like calling a man named Jose and pretending you don't know any better.
Exactly. Now, see, if you honestly had no idea,
then
you should be forgiven for that.
But if Jose tells you even once that it's Jose,
then you must know.
Yes.
Okay.
So, we were walking around in three different places and lots of chanting and I accidentally followed the wrong guy at one point, and he turned around angrily at me and went telling me to go back, and I was like, oh, sorry, she told me to go. And I couldn't say any of this out loud. Anyway, I felt a bit like a Mr. Bean in there. But I had a good time. It was a good workout, lots of kneeling.
Are you gonna go back?
Probably not, Casey.
What?
Not because I didn't like it,
okay.
But I just don't know. I think I have some self-exploration to do in terms of Buddhism and what I like out of it.
Yeah.
This was very much like church Buddhism.
I see.
I think I'm maybe more into like at-home practice.
I see. Well, I mean, that is one of the things about it, is that it doesn't have a strict doctrine in the same sense.
Well there are just like many.
It's like this philosophical idea versus like Hindu, where it has like all these different traditions that are kind of pulled together.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wonder if maybe you can just do that. Take it on your own scale and then maybe go back every now and then just to test the waters and maybe see what else you can learn from that kind of experience. Because it always seems interesting to go once, go a few times, go test it out. Because anytime you go to one place the first time, I feel like even if it's a bar, I have that same exact feeling. I'm like, I don't know this bartender. Do I order over here? No, I don't. Oh, I've just been standing here like an idiot for like 6 hours. Like, you know, what do you do? So I at least would encourage that you maybe give it a second chance or third chance just to kind of say, okay, now I kind of feel where I'm at. When you go in and she says, hey, this is not your first time.
Right.
Welcome back. Maybe you'll feel a little bit more comfortable.
I appreciate that sentiment. I might go back.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's very flattering that you think that she would remember me.
Alex, you're extremely rememberable. Memorable? Rememberable.
Rememberable, yeah.
Well, I'm happy that you did that. I think that's really important to do. You know, it's a part of this exploration process.
Yeah, I would encourage anybody who's curious just to walk in. They were extremely welcoming and friendly.
Except that one guy. He's like, don't follow me. I don't want to be followed.
He was also nice. I don't want to paint him as a villain type. He just was nice, and but he was, you know, I'm looking at it from his perspective, and like, he's got a job to do this morning.
Yeah.
And this guy just walks in and wants to be a part of things, and we'll probably never see him again.
Yeah,
a
guy walks into a Buddhist temple.
Here we go.
That's all I have.
And there's probably so many great Buddhist jokes.
I'm
don't
sure
you reckon?
Yeah. We'll save that for the after hours podcast.
Where the punch our Howard Stern-esque type radio show.
So we got a bunch of naked ladies over here. They're slowly taking their clothes off while we make Buddhist jokes over here.
And the monk says, "Be here now." All right, we got to take a break. Today we're talking the beach she-oak.
I thought you'd be like, all right, today we're sponsored by Bud Light. And I'm like, what? Okay. Yeah, anyway, sorry, Alex.
We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Casey, you know our future's bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we gotta wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man. I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
It sure is right.
That is Goodr. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over, but I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there and then picked up a pair of sunglasses and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
Well, the time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6, or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
She's incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, these would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh, yeah. What did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex. I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for Completely Arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving Completely Arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Huh. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we are talking the beech she-oak, attorney at law, is the joke that I've said three times mm-hmm. before. Mm-hmm. We have some interesting stories to tell today.
Yes, we do.
I think it's going to be a fun episode because we got a good smat. We have a good charcuterie board of kind of facts and feelings today.
Yeah.
And we're talking about turtles.
We are. We're talking about turtles ultimately, but as I was reading through here, I'm like, well, there's way more than turtles here. You know,
sure.
It is not turtles all the way down.
It is not turtles all the way down.
Yeah, it actually only goes maybe a foot or two down. And then after that, it's a lot of different
2 feet of turtles and then sand and soil.
And then mostly sand and soil for the rest of it.
And then you hit the water bed.
And then everything's just salty, briny.
Casey.
Yes, Alex.
She-oak.
She-oak. Otherwise, for those of you who may not be familiar, the Australian pine.
Yeah.
Which of all the trees that you would call pine, this is probably the one where I'm like, okay, pass. I give you a pass on this.
Really?
Because it truly, honestly does look like a pine. Like,
yeah.
I will throw shade at no one who decides that they're like, this has got to be a pine.
I see.
It's even got a cone-like thing that looks like a cone.
Now, it does.
It doesn't look anything like a pine cone.
I don't know. To the untrained eye, I think it does.
Exactly. I completely concur. In fact, when I initially saw this, because I've actually seen this tree a few different times, the first time was in the Philippines on a island called Zimbales, or an area called Zimbales. And I was like, what is this? Like, I just had no clue. I was convinced it was a conifer until I found this little cone. And then a boss of mine whose family is from more tropical places years ago in Seattle, I saw the little cone-like fruiting structure and I was like, oh, it's that tree.
Wow.
And it is like, it's such an interesting tree.
Casey, as we do every episode, let's imagine that you and I are walking along the beaches of Keewaydin Islands.
Where are these?
These are in Florida.
Oh.
Kind of southern Florida on the western side.
The western side, okay.
So we're going to come back to these islands later in the episode.
This is the Gulf side of the Florida Peninsula.
That's right.
Okay.
On the Gulf side of town.
All right.
And we come across some beech she-oak / Australian pine. Let's ID this tree.
Let's do it. Now, a quick note on the scientific name. I read the pronunciation here as being Casuarina equisetifolium, which is fun to say. Now, I have always pronounced this Casuarina, but apparently it's Casuarina.
Casuarina?
Yes. So it's like C-A-S-U-A-R-I-N-A. So when I read that, I kind of just jam the U-A-R all together. So it'd be Casuarina.
Acacifolia?
No, that is Equisetifolia. Equisetifolia.
Equisetifolia.
Yes, and I'll tell you why.
God.
I know, it's not a bad name, but it's one you just have to like figure out and remember how to pronounce.
I guess. It's no Metasequoia glyptic striboides.
It is not. That flows perfectly. It's like a mountain stream. It's so pure.
This is clunky.
This is a little more clunky. So the specific epithet comes from equisetum, which is what Pliny the Elder called a horse tail, like a literal tail of a horse.
Right.
So we have a plant that we call horsetail that is a small little ancient species of an herb that grows up in like wetland kind of areas.
Yep.
And we call it horsetail. The scientific name for that is equisetum.
Uh-huh.
So this is Equisetifolia, which is the equisetum-like leaves of this Casuarina.
Wow.
Yes, which, it again, spectacular name. Like, it just makes so much sense. When you look at the leaves, or what you think are the leaves, it looks just like Equisetum. So, Equisetifolia. Equisetifolia.
This name is like a reference to a reference.
Yes, which is, in my opinion, the best names. Because you trace them, you know? You're like...
Yeah, I suppose that's kind of fun.
This tree, when you look at it, you're like, oh, these leaves look like horsetail. Oh, it's the horsetail-like tree, so it makes sense.
Okay.
You know, or it's a scientific name that is a reference to a reference to a reference, but that reference is, it all makes sense.
It does make sense. I don't love it.
That's fair. That's fair.
I don't want to start on a negative note.
But you know what? Minus 1 point.
It's not very zen of me.
So I'm going to say Casuarina because Casuarina just seems clunkier.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just going to smash that together. And you know what? Whatever.
Come at him.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, let's talk about the overall morphology of this tree, Casey.
Yeah, Alex, I am glad you asked.
Oh boy.
It's a tree that grows, apparently it can get up to 175 feet tall, which is pretty stunning. That's like 45 meters, and I'm blown away by that. I had no idea that it could get that tall.
It's a big old tree.
It feels like it should not get that tall, but apparently it does in the right circumstances, and it also tends to have a flat topped crown because it's not a conifer. We should note this right off the bat. It looks like a pine. Tis not a pine. It is actually in the Juglandales, I believe. So it is in a group that includes the oaks and the birches and the juglans, as well as all the myrtles.
Walnuts.
So
this is an angiosperm.
It is an angiosperm. Hell yes, Alex.
I did it.
Well done. So the fact that it generally has a single stem and looks like a pine tree is just superficial. It will have branches that are lateral that grow up and end up growing a little bit faster than the main stem. So it kind of develops this broader flat-topped canopy as it gets older. But the whole form of the tree is very frilly, very feathery, very wispy looking because it has these long needle-like growths that are photosynthetic. So it looks like you have this needled tree growing up that just looks like a bunch of pom-poms on top of pom-poms on top of pom-poms.
Now, would you call those leaves?
I would not.
This is interesting.
And here's why. The leaves of this tree are actually like a millimeter or two.
Oh.
And they are whorled at these little sections along branches. And these branches are photosynthetic. They have... Okay. In the cuticle of the branch tissue, the green that we think to ourselves, this is a leaf, but it's not. The leaves are at these joints. So one of the things about equisetum, about horsetail, is that it is jointed, where it grows up and then there's like a joint, then it grows up, then there's a joint, then it grows up. Often they have these leaves that come out, the equisetum does. So it has this kind of like this interesting appearance where it's like a central stem with these layers of leaves coming out, and then it goes up, then another layer of leaves, then it goes up, then another layer of leaves. You know what I'm talking about? You've seen these kind of horsetails?
Yeah, I think so. It kind of looks like they have a little, like they're almost like skeleton arms.
Yes, yeah. And it looks like if you have an umbrella, but you take all the fabric of the umbrella away, and then you just put another umbrella on top, then another one on top, then another one on top.
Right.
So the curious thing is that the leaves are really teeny tiny. They're essentially these scale-like bits that don't do a damn thing.
Okay.
They are completely minimized while the photosynthetic ability is put into the stem of these little branchlets. So the branchlets come out, and then there's this little ring of leaves that I think I've read anywhere from 6 to 10 to 4 to 20. So there could be a significant amount of these little teeny tiny leaves that are whirled. They just go in this little circle, and then there's another growth, and that is kind of the little branchlet, the little twig covered in green, and they have little tiny ridges in it with little tiny hairs in the middle.
How strange.
They're really weird. Like, why they decided to go this route? No idea.
Can I say, though, that those needle-like growths,
yeah,
I think I would effectively call those the leaves.
Now, this is a really interesting question, because do you remember our discussion of the Cyadopides, the umbrella pine, where they had those cladodes, where it looks like a leaf, but it is actually the same exact thing. It's a branch tissue that comes out that does the photosynthesis.
Oh, right. Yeah, sure.
So they call those cladodes.
Yeah.
As opposed to leaves, because the leaves were these teeny tiny little things that, again, were just, like, for all intents and purposes, ignored evolutionarily. So I guess, and this is where I'm with you. This looks so much like a pine that you'd say those are just the leaves. Those are doing the things that mm-hmm. leaves are doing. Botanically speaking, we're looking for the bud. The bud is not at the base of the branchlets. They're at the base of these little teeny tiny leaves that are so completely minimized, they're just not doing anything.
So these grows, these cladodes, are performing... No, these are not cladodes.
These are not cladodes. I looked and I have seen nothing that says these are cladodes.
Okay, these are growths.
They're just branches that are doing photosynthesis.
I think they are performing the roles of the CEO.
Yeah.
They are essentially the CEO, but
very fair.
On paper, those little world...
Yes.
Millimeter long things are the leaves.
Exactly. I know no one really thinks about this, but it's just like the end of the Western Roman Empire, Alex.
Oh, wow. Tell me more, Casey.
Well, you know, all the emperors were just puppets. They didn't do anything, but on paper, they were in control.
Interesting.
But really, it was the behind the scenes generals doing all the work.
Oh.
So I think that that's really, I think you're 100% right.
Okay.
So I think from now on, we're just going to call them the leaves by accident, because we're probably just going to call them the leaves.
Yeah. They're lowercase L leaves.
Yes, exactly.
Well, let's talk bark, Case.
The bark is also an interesting kind of thing. It is shaggy and somewhat fibrous, but it also kind of pops off as if it is like a shagbark hickory or something like that.
It does look very coniferous.
Yeah, so it's like it's popping off, but it's not. So it looks like this mix between a juniper and a hickory.
Yeah.
Like shagbark specifically, where the branch or the bark is kind of popping off.
Yeah,
as
kind
it gets
of bell
older.
Bottom shape. Yeah.
Which I think is so fascinating. Like, it's just kind of, it does a little bit of both. And it's kind of reddish gray, kind of brownish gray. Like, it depends on the age of the tree.
Mm.
It looks nice, but it doesn't really do a whole lot.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's very fire resistant. I think it'll just kind of, fire will affect it and kill the tree. But they often sprout from the base again if you don't completely kill off the roots and everything.
Mm.
Not
That's
so much.
That's a little bit of a foreshadow, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Oh, very much so. But there's really three species. One species, I think it's the Casuarina cunninghamia. That one is way more likely to sprout. Whereas there's another one called Casuarina glauca. That one doesn't sprout as much, nor does the one that we're talking about today, Equisetifolium.
Interesting.
So they apparently will, if you give them the chance, they generally, though ours will not, but they have a really intense fibrous root system that's very shallow. So they grow out. And another thing to note, the morphology doesn't really show this very much, but apparently they can take the worst possible conditions, grow totally fine, and then they'll just get knocked over as soon as wind comes.
Right.
Which is kind of funny. Like, I just, they're a super tough tree, it sounds like, in every regard, until you, like, a wind comes, and it's then they're just like, ah, and they just keel over.
It's like one of those Western town movie facades.
Exactly, yeah. Like, you get a strong breeze, and the whole thing just kind of topples.
But, yeah, they do have, I will say, you know, you shouldn't judge a tree by its bark.
Sure.
But, so to speak. But looking at this tree, I'm like, this is a flimsy beech tree.
You know what is so curious about this?
B-E-A-C-H.
Oh, yes. Okay, good. Good call, because I think it's also very closely related. Now, funny thing, Alex. Did you happen to find the Janka hardness of this?
Wow, you know, I didn't look into it, Case. Did you?
I didn't. I did, but I couldn't find it for this species.
Interesting.
But I have read multiple places that the wood is so strong, it will ruin saws.
Wow.
Like, it apparently, if you want to cut it down, you need to cut it down and then chop it into, or cut it into small firewood before it gets dried out. Because once it gets dried out, it's one of the hardest woods around.
Wow. That's kind of shocking.
It is amazingly shocking.
I guess if wind blows these trees over really easily, they're coming out like roots first.
Exactly.
They're not breaking in half.
Precisely.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was like such an interesting thing.
That's very odd.
It really just kind of will come into our discussion of this tree in a little bit, because it just seems like from one side, this tree's awesome. From the other side, everyone hates this tree.
Yes.
And I just am kind of like, okay, so I have whiplash from
it's
looking
like a
back
tennis
and forth.
Match.
Exactly. Yeah.
Casey, I want to talk about the flower and then the quote, cone.
Oh, thank you for putting the quotes on.
Yeah.
This flower, this is our tree, is a monoecious tree. Most of the other species are dioecious, so they have male trees and female trees, or rather trees that have the pistillate versus trees that have the staminate flowers.
Monoecious being that they have both.
Precisely. Yeah. So these are the male flowers, the ones that produce the pollen. Those are like little catkins. They're yellow, maybe an inch or so long, look very, very similar to all the other trees that they're related to, your oaks and your walnuts and that kind of thing.
Hmm.
But the pistillate flowers, the ones that we generally call the female flowers that have the ova inside, they, to me, I think the best way to say it, Alex, is they look like one of those little troll dolls.
Yeah,
familiar?
Sure.
But the troll has been going bald for like a couple years.
Okay.
So its hair is very thin. It's still like it's coming out. It's very kind of wiry.
I can see that.
Yeah. It looks like have you ever seen a baby like a brand newborn that has like really like stringy hair? Like its hair just has not quite come in.
Yes.
But it's also not like a nice full head of hair. It's kind of like,
yeah,
it looks a little alien-like.
That's the hair that's going to fall out before the real hair grows.
I think that is what this looks
wow.
like. Except it's red. Like it's this gorgeous kind of ruby color. And it's just, you know, it looks like these fun little things. It actually looks to me a lot like a true beech flower. And it ends up growing into these little tiny inch, maybe 3/4 inch capsule, or like clusters of capsules. They call it just a seed head.
Yeah, it's like an aggregate of capsules.
It looks like it, yeah. And then it pops open. As it pops open, it releases these little winged seeds that they constantly call samaras. But I just don't think botanically that's correct.
Why not?
Because a samara is itself the whole thing. This is a samara that is coming from a capsule that opens up.
Yeah.
So I don't think that, I mean, it's hard to put all these things in boxes, but I think botanically speaking, this is not a samara. This is just a winged seed.
Because the capsule would have to be the samara because it contains the
precisely.
Seed.
Yes. So those two things would have to be fused together.
Yes.
And then there would be a wing that comes off of that.
Right.
So that would be my botanical non-expert opinion.
Okay.
So if anyone else has any idea about this, please send it my way, because I just am not convinced that it is a true Samara. This I think is, it's a winged seed.
This is like a tree of lies. This is like...
It seems like it.
The trickster god of trees.
But also, you got to give it credit because it's a tree that like has completely done all that. Like it's tricked so many different people into calling it a different thing. It also like just does things... It's like a platypus. Like it just is... It does not fit any like really good description. And like if you saw this... in like a fossil record, I feel like people would be like, what the hell is this? What is it related to?
It definitely looks like a prehistoric plant.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the horsetailness of it all.
Right. Very true.
But yeah, it even has a crisis of identity taxonomically, Casey.
It totally does. Yeah. It used to be all Casuarina, 100 species. Now it's in 4 different families.
Wow.
So it's very much has gone through some transitions. And obviously we call it she-oak is a very common name. Funny enough, apparently it's called that because the wood is so hard. So the oaks of Europe would be, I guess, I don't know where the she came from.
She-oaks.
I assume so. Yeah. So it's like there's the oaks of Europe and this is the she-oak. It's like one of those oaks, but it's the she version.
Wow.
So I don't really understand it. And I saw some things like, the terminology is ambiguous as to why we call it that.
We really need to cover more they, them oaks.
Representation is very important. So
it's such a stupid joke. My God.
I know, but I'm glad you said it because that's a funny joke in our moment in time.
It didn't help that you were taking a drink of water when I said it and the punchline flopped.
Oh, geez.
So those are the parts of this wild little pine oak thing.
Right. And Noah is curious about this tree to add another layer of platypusness to it.
Wow. Platypusness.
Yeah. Platypusness. It is, in its roots, it has Frankia. That is, you recall, the bacteria that lives in the root nodules of alders and some other species of trees. So it is a nitrogen fixer. It will put nitrogen back in the soil where nitrogen is lacking. So it can grow in some of the worst areas, the quote unquote barren wastelands. It will grow in those places because it can get essentially its own important nutrients, either from the air or from these, you know, little nodules in its roots.
Wow.
So put that on the plus side. It will rehabilitate soil that has no nitrogen in it.
It's kind of an impressive resume so far.
Isn't it?
I would look at this resume and be like, I gotta meet this guy. Okay.
At least you're curious, right?
Yeah.
Well, so another thing about this tree is that it grows in kind of the South Pacific. And the rangeland is hard to discern because it has spread a lot because it grows right on the edge of the ocean. It's very, very salt tolerant. It will grow in sand, in these places where sometimes high tide will come and cover the roots in the base of the tree, like at really extreme high tides.
What does salt do to a tree that's not salt tolerant?
It essentially dehydrates it. So it will suck out all of the water and cause it to die. Also, I think it will poison it just because it will cause the cells to be way out of balance in terms of their salt content. So it'll either suck it out or it'll push it all in, and it essentially just causes dehydration.
Wow, just like us, huh?
Yeah, pretty similar to us, yeah.
Just like us.
Don't drink salt water, everyone. It's really bad for you.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I don't think we have to say that. Casey, would now be a good time for my turtle tale?
I would love that. But one thing that I think I should note before you get into the turtle tale is that this tree, growing where it grows, was spread throughout the world to do some very specific things. So it is... as we've noted, it fixes nitrogen. It grows in where we would consider a place to be barren, this tree grows, which I should note means it's not barren. You know what I mean?
Fair point.
It's like there's alpine trees. It's an oxymoron. Alpine means there are no trees.
Right.
It's above tree line.
Right.
So it's like, if there are trees there, it's not alpine. If there are plants and things growing, it's not barren.
Yeah.
Also, I don't really like the term barren because I think it actually is relating to a woman who's unable to have children.
Yes.
So a woman is barren because she is not fertile. So land that's not fertile is also barren, but I don't know which one came first.
It's sexist.
Yes, exactly. And this is, we're going to talk about this. It's on our agenda, has been for some time, but botanical, not botanical sexism. We've covered that way too many times.
Yeah.
This is ecofeminism.
Oh, fun.
Yes, it's a very interesting topic. We're not going to even talk about it here, but barren in the terminology that we use for women and for natural things, there's a correlation there.
And ships.
Exactly. Oh, and for like all so many things.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
Countries, mother, the motherland.
Other than Germany. Germany is the fatherland.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
The Führer.
Yeah. Ugh. Which is, it's, isn't it ironic also that most of these entire places that call their land she are patriarchal societies that go through the man.
That is interesting, Casey.
Anyway, this is literally going to be a topic we're going to cover sometime soon. So we can't dive too far into it. So anyway, the other thing about this is that they got planted in these places because people wanted to either do one of a few things. Stop erosion, which oceans are very good at eroding beach land. It's what they do. They've done it for a long time, but they also put sand back. So we tried to stop that. So we planted these trees and grew them along beaches and a little bit further inland where the sand or the soil is very sandy and very rough. So these trees not only put nitrogen back in the soil, which is good for the soil, they also are able to be windbreaks. They're also able to help stop erosion. At least that's what we thought.
I'm assuming that their root structures are very hairy and thick and matted.
So perfect. Very well determined.
Concluded.
Yes. What is the word I'm looking for? Very well done, Alex.
Thanks.
But that's the thing. So where the turtles come in, which we're going to talk about in a second.
Oh, yeah. It's almost turtle time.
Almost turtle time. Everyone get ready. Get out of your shells.
Get out of your shells.
We planted all these trees in all of these areas where we humans wanted to stop the natural processes from happening.
Right.
Because we had a new, different use for it. Maybe that's our own land use choices. We have a house and we don't want our land to literally go into the ocean. Or maybe we're like, wow, there's just all these dunes over here. We got to settle those wild things down, plant a tree on them. And this happened. So in their native area in Australia, for example, they're like protected trees.
Really?
Yeah. They are one of there's an evolutionary partnership with them and a black cockatoo that they eat a lot of the seeds.
That's right.
So in other invasive places where there are invasive parrots and cockatoos and parakeets, other birds, they eat the seeds, all these little minute seeds.
Uh-huh.
And so there's you know, this partnership between certain birds and these trees. They also are, in their native area, very good at putting these nitrogens and these soils back in. So they have all these things that when you take them to a different location are really bad, in their home are really good.
That's very curious.
Yeah.
It's almost a reverse Superman.
Oh, yeah.
They have superpowers on their home planet.
Yes.
You put them on Earth and they're debilitated.
That's so good. Yeah, on Earth, they're just an ecological scourge. So
they become a liability.
Yeah. So all that to say, they have this weird effect on turtle habitat.
Yes.
And Alex, you wanted to do this tree initially because you're like, I want to talk about turtles. Casey, I think I have an idea for a tree. And I'm like, I know exactly what tree you're talking about. This is going to be great. So off to you, Alex. Tell us about these turtles.
So, okay. I want to give a little bit of a preempt here. I know you shouldn't preempt things. You should just go into it. Don't give disclaimers if you're about to perform. Sorry, everybody, I have a cold. And then you perform and everybody's like, yeah, he sounds like shit.
Yeah, you just got to go and have everyone assume that was a specific choice you
right?
made.
A creative decision. Having said that, I found one source on this story, Casey.
Yeah.
I could not find anything about it anywhere else. And this source reads and plays like a high school ecology like textbook video, you know? Go to the website to see more. And it's like, it's so fucking boring and you feel like you're dying watching it. That's what this is. But it's a very interesting story.
Well, the good news is I found a little bit more. And I know that you also did.
Well, sort of. I found more about, I kind of went down a turtle hole.
as one does,
and found some interesting things about loggerhead turtles that I'm excited to talk about.
And that is, I found the same stuff.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
I am not going to telegraph, Alex, what I found.
Oh.
Or rather, a finding that's going to cause just so much controversy.
Oh, I love a controversy.
Oh, let's talk turtles, baby.
All right, it's officially turtle time. Okay, so once upon a time, Casey.
Ah, turtle time.
This group of loggerhead turtles found its home on the beaches of Keewaydin Island. And if you look at the map, Keewaydin is like a really long island. It's almost like, you know, when I think island, I think like a blob in the middle of the water. This is like a little, this is like an island by proxy, where it's just like a strip of land with a little water between it and the mainland.
They call those barrier islands.
Okay, yeah, I think it's that.
Yeah.
God knows why people live on this thing right next to the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, it seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah, some people are, I guess they like this, I don't know, you want to live on your own island, I guess. Yeah, well, people have their ideas.
Yeah. So people live on this island, Casey, but so do turtles, loggerhead turtles.
Yeah.
Very quickly, the scientific name for loggerhead turtles is Coretta Coretta.
What?
And I wanted to say this is Bob Dylan's favorite sea animal.
Why?
Carina, Carina.
Oh, okay. This is Coretta Coretta.
This is Coretta Coretta.
Honestly, what is that? That is, I had no idea.
Yeah. It's one of those, it's one of those so nice they named it twice.
I love this.
A Walla Walla
so
situation.
So easy. Yeah.
So loggerhead turtles, beautiful animals. They look like a sea turtle. They've got these big keratin beaks.
Yeah.
Are they considered beaks, Casey?
I think that's a perfectly fine description.
They certainly look like beaks. They feel like beaks. Hey, if it quacks like a duck, right?
Yeah, if it quacks like a duck, it might be a turtle.
It might be a turtle's beak. They are, this was interesting, they're carnivores.
Yes.
So they just like crunch through crabs and shit.
Yeah, that's the beak.
Yes, that's the beakness of it all. So these loggerhead turtles found a home on this Keewaydin Island.
Yeah.
The way turtles are born is really interesting, Casey.
Yeah.
So the mother turtle, let's start from like kind of the middle.
Yeah.
The mother turtle lays eggs in a hole in the sand.
Yeah. And they climb up out of the water.
Yes.
Onto the beach, like above the tide line, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And they lay their precious little soft eggs.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's, they're not really like chicken eggs where it has like a hard shell.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They're really soft looking.
Yeah. That's, I've seen that. Like it's another reptile thing where their eggs are not like calcified.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're like membrane.
Exactly.
Contained. They lay their eggs. They boop, 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 you know, put some sand on top. Mm-hmm, they sit on top of it like a rooster or like a hen, excuse me.
Rooster's like, how dare you?
And then, you know, some time passes and the eggs hatch. That's all normal.
So do the loggerheads stay or do the mothers go back into the ocean?
That I don't know.
Okay.
Do you know?
I think they go back into the ocean. Yeah.
While the eggs hang.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. They don't protect them. It's one of those, what is it? K specialists. Is it K?
Right.
I think it's K.
It's like a number over.
Yes.
What is it? Quantity over quality or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Throwing shit at the wall. That's a nice respectful way to put it.
So the way I describe this is a K reproductive system. They just throw shit at the wall and hope some of it sticks and carry on their germline. So moving on.
Yeah, a few weeks later, you got some turtles. So the baby turtles, they come out, they down to the ocean.
They have like crawl out of this hole. I've seen videos of this where they just kind of like emerge.
It's wild.
They swim through the sand to the surface.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And, you know, as is what is it called? K selection?
Yeah, or K reproductive strategy.
Reproductive strategy. A lot of these little baby turtles do not make it to the water. Mm-hmm. They perish in the hot sun. It's very sad. But the ones that do, Casey, this was my most fascinating find.
Hold on. We were doing this backwards. It's R. I should have checked this before.
Oh, shit.
R selected species.
Well,
they have shorter lifespans and they essentially just throw shit at the wall. Many young and they just let them go.
Let's keep it as it is to show that even experts make mistakes.
Oh, thank you.
Well, we're not experts in turtles. So
yeah, we read this somewhere else.
Novices make mistakes. So The turtles that, the baby turtles that do make to the water, something really fascinating happens. They call it the lost years.
What?
There's a chunk of time between the baby turtles hatching and the baby turtles returning, the juvenile turtles returning to feed.
Really?
There's this chunk of time. People, they don't know where they go. It's very hard to track baby turtles, Casey. I don't know if you've ever tried.
No, but there's something similar to this with like eels. Where like thousands of eels from across the ocean all go down into some giant hole and then they come out having mated with new eels.
Yes. And nobody really knows what they do. They're called the lost years.
That's so interesting. How many years? How long is it?
I don't know, Case.
Wow.
But it says lost years, so I'm assuming it's maybe it's years.
That's so curious. I know it takes like 25 years for them to get sexually mature.
Yes.
So interesting. They just disappear. They go into the great ocean, the great beyond.
Yeah, they go on their Rumspringa and they come back as young men and women.
That is so fascinating.
Having had their first sip of alcohol and their first television show.
Good for them.
So they the little babies come back after their lost years.
Okay.
They've grown a beard.
Mm-hmm. They're now they have political opinions.
Yeah. Got weirdly conservative. on the East Coast, where our story takes place, there's an area called the Sargassum Sea or Sargassum.
Mm-hmm.
It's a type of seaweed.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of these turtles go to just like feast and grow. I'm sure it is a heyday for predators.
Seems like a nice place though.
Yeah. So once they're fully grown, they head back to where they were born in order to mate. And the whole process starts over again, Casey.
That's beautiful.
And here's a fun little tidbit, Casey. They are temperature dependent, sex determinated.
Yes. And that is the crux of like this whole conversation.
Yes.
I love it.
Fascinating. So in this little turtle egg hole,
yeah,
as we'll call it.
Turtle egg hole.
The egg in the hole, like the toast.
Yeah.
If the turtles incubate below 82.4 degrees Fahrenheit, the hatchlings will most likely all be male.
Okay.
If the eggs incubate at 89.6 degrees Fahrenheit, above 89.6 degrees Fahrenheit, they'll mostly be female.
Wow.
So it's somewhere in the middle, you're going to get a mix.
Okay, so if it's between those 82 and 89?
82.5 and 89.5, essentially.
Okay.
You're going to get a mix of male and female.
Gotcha. That's the optimal kind of half and half.
I suppose so. For continuing your lineage, that would be sort of like ideal situation, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Do you know the phrase that turtle researchers have?
No, Alex, tell me.
The phrase, because of this temperature-dependent sex determination, the phrase is cool dudes and hot chicks.
Yeah, all right. Man, what undergrad thought of that one?
Oh, I love it. It's one of those wood wide web things, you know? It's just so perfect, and you like kind of roll your eyes at it, and you go, actually, it is.
It does make sense.
It is perfect and a great way to remember this.
Cool dudes, hot chicks.
That's right, Casey.
So silly.
Which may be the name of the episode. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll find out. When we are referring to this tree, that's one of the things, right, that people have talked about, where they shade the beaches.
Oh, wow. Making it cooler.
Yes.
Making it more likely that loggerhead turtles will give birth to males.
Exactly.
Cool dudes.
Underneath the shade of these trees.
Wow.
The other thing, though, is that, like you noted, they have these really intense fibrous root systems so that the adults that are about to lay the eggs, they are not able to actually dig down, because I don't know if you've ever seen a sea turtle dig a hole, but it's one of those things that has to be some anachronism from millions of years ago where they are so inept.
They're doing the best they can.
Oh my God. It's like you and I going to the beach, taking our shoes off and digging a hole with the tops of our feet. I'm like, why?
Oh, it's so amazing.
I guess it's good that they're still going for it, but my God, they are ill-equipped for the task.
It is. You kind of just want to put your hand on their shoulder and say, you know, there's a better way.
Yeah, I can help. You've got to
figure out a better way to do this.
Yeah.
So this key Waden Island, Casey,
yeah.
as you alluded to earlier, the foreshadowing bit that these trees are planted in order to create a windbreak.
Right. Well, at least they used to. Now they're just growing. They are so horrifyingly invasive,
yeah.
Specifically in southern Florida.
Yes. Well, that's where the residents of this island were like, hey, this will do.
Yeah.
Let's plant these along the coast.
Exactly.
Here.
That'll keep our houses from literally getting destroyed by the sea.
That's right. However, in doing so, they literally destroyed the turtles' habitat.
Naturally.
For the reasons you gave, you know, it makes everything cooler. The root systems take up the space that they need to dig the soil, which is already a arduous task for these little funny guys. And also, Casey, the first windstorm that came along.
Yeah.
I mean, it's southern Florida.
There's they generally call the windstorms hurricanes down there.
Yeah. The first big ass windstorm that came through knocked over all of these flimsy trees and made it nigh impossible for the little baby turtles to reach the water.
Yeah.
And it fucked up the ecosystem so bad.
That is just, it's crazy. It's just literally at this point, a physical obstruction, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's a big big pile of wood laying on the beach and you are a baby turtle and you go, I need to get over there.
Yeah. There's the ocean. I hear it. I'm following the reflection of the moon. It's right over there.
Oh, is that how it works?
I think so. Yeah. So if there's like lights on buildings, the turtles end up going the wrong direction.
Oh
yeah. Oh, there's some documentaries that are really sad.
I don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely should not talk about little turtles crossing freeways.
Oh my God. Stop that.
It's horrifying.
By not talking about it, you were talking about it.
Yeah, I kind of did that.
So
sorry.
So the residents, or maybe not the residents, Casey. I think in the story it says it was like a group of conservationists or bio rehabilitators or something.
Yeah, okay.
Said, hey guys, you are completely fucking things up for these loggerhead turtles. They were here first. Please stop.
Yeah, step off.
So they came in. They removed the debris
from
these beach she oaks, and they started planting native plants.
Because
one of the big problems was that these beach she oaks just exploded in population and took over the whole beach.
And I should add to this, I've read that they're also allelopathic. So they shade things, they throw down a lot of litter, and they also chemically alter their environment so that they are by far the only thing that grows in any regard that is healthy or happy in this area.
This is I'll come back to that. I have an idea about that. So they started planting native plants, kind of rehabilitated the region.
Yeah.
And a year later, turtle populations started to come back a little bit.
There you go.
It happened pretty fast, man.
Well, I feel like it could. I mean, if one or two, because it's on like a 20-year, lag.
Yeah.
So the newly minted adults are now coming back to this area.
Right.
So that I could imagine if they catch it, maybe in the next few years, there's going to be a dip after they do their work, because everything that happened, or all the generations that didn't quite make it in their full strength prior to removing all that stuff, those are going to be lagged by another 20 years. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow. Okay. But it happens every year. There are new babies every year.
Yeah. But if those new babies don't properly, if their population is reduced.
I got it.
Yeah.
Wow. Anyway. So according to this one source, things are becoming back to normal and a healthy environment for the turtles,
which
now.
Is so great. I mean, that one source, that one spot, that's fantastic. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Like they basically
said,
story. Do this, change it. And then it had an immediate effect.
Yeah.
It happens a lot with salmon as well. Like if you get rid of a dam on a certain river, then the salmon the very next year are going up and like repopulating this, you know, spot that used to be completely devoid of salmon.
Wow.
Because this dam was in the way.
They also, salmon like turtles are one of those animals that return to its place of birth.
That's exactly what I thought.
To me, yeah.
Now, so here's a question, because I found same exact adage of hot chicks and cool dudes.
Yeah.
Now, this was from an NPR interviewer or story from 2022.
Okay.
And they noted that the sea turtles are having more issues because they have too many hot chicks because of climate change.
Oh, wow.
So there are more hotter beaches in southern Florida because there's no trees there. Let's just say this is a fine habitat, but the sand is getting beat by hotter heat. So therefore, there are more hot chicks and less cool dudes.
I mean, hey, sounds all right to me, buddy.
Spring break, baby. We're going.
That was a joke. No, it's a serious problem.
but here's my controversial take. These, you have on one side an invasive tree that's making it so there's more cool dudes.
Yeah.
But then on the other side, where you get rid of the tree, you get too many hot chicks.
Well,
what are we going to do?
Yeah, it's like that was like putting a Band-Aid on a cut that you didn't have yet.
Oh.
And then you took the Band-Aid off and you got a cut and you say, see, I needed that Band-Aid.
Exactly. So, but here's they ended with, I think it was in the same article, they said that the turtles actually have a very strong survival instinct.
Mm.
So in order to now find the right conditions, they're laying eggs, and they found it so recently, as high as New Jersey.
Wow.
Have you ever thought of New Jersey as a sea turtle tropical wonderland?
I do now.
Yeah. It's a garden state, baby.
The climate change, huh?
Yeah. So
damn.
I am so curious about this tree because in all these places, it's like horrifically invasive. In southern Florida, it is a type 1 noxious weed.
Type 1.
Yes. Essentially, it is illegal to like physically have it in your possession, to procreate it, to do any propagation whatsoever.
Wow.
And it is, I don't think if it's like growing on your land, you're not like going to get in trouble.
Uh-huh.
But if you're like a nursery and you're like actively growing new ones,
okay,
you'll get in trouble.
Yeah. If raided.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're like, everyone wants to get rid of them as quickly as they can. But they've taken over like a bunch of islands in southern Florida, down through the Keys, in the Bahamas. I've, like I said, seen it in the Philippines, but I think it might be native in the Philippines to some extent.
I believe so.
So there is, it's just this very interesting thing where in certain instances, it's a tree that the same exact traits, everything's exactly the same. It's doing really good work. And then out of that context, the same exact traits make it just a horrific problem.
Yeah.
And when it comes to the turtles, I can't tell because, I don't know, maybe it's just that this is a space that has not ever had these kinds of trees growing there before, but they grow in other places where other turtles exist.
Right.
So I'm so curious if it's just this habitat where there's not historically this species of tree causing trouble, or is there something else that's going on here? Because if you go down to Australia or you go down to any of these other islands in the South Pacific where Casuarina trees exist and grow in these spaces, are there still the same problems?
I do know, Casey, that loggerhead turtles are like globetrotters. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere in that zone. In that like
the tropical kind of warm water.
Yeah. They're all around the world. So that is a curious question. I wonder if it's like, if your habitat is like relative,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Are these the loggerhead sub variety that's just like, no, we like this beach in this spot. Yeah. So if something else is here that changes that, we can't deal with that.
It doesn't matter what our cousins in Australia, how they deal with it. We haven't dealt with it here.
Exactly. And here's another thought. And this is just because I said I needed to throw some controversy out. Before people came around, there was a lot of just stuff on the beach. You go to the Olympic National Park in Washington State, here in the Pacific Northwest, and they have a whole section that is protected beach area. You go out there, and it's just covered in gigantic logs all over the place.
I've been there.
So if we went to any of these beaches prior to Western people coming and cleaning the beaches off or burning all the logs or you name it, now we have beaches that are so pure sand that everyone's loving it, blah, blah, blah. But historically, anytime there was a giant storm and trees came down, went to the rivers, flow out into the ocean, they get thrown back on the beach. There would just be logs and detritus and things all over the place. Beaches historically are not perfect, you know, white sand things. Like, they're covered in shit. So turtles have been around for a long time. Like, they're one of the most long-lived variety of life that has ever existed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very curious about this this being a kind of a short-term thing in terms of, is it that a log, or like that these things have fallen and they block the sea turtles? Is that something that the sea turtles have never dealt with in the history of their lives?
Yeah. You
know? So I totally get that, you know, we see this habitat. There's no trees and there are turtles. We then see these trees come up and then fall over and just look like shit. And then we're like, well, that's causing trouble with the turtles. It's like, well, okay, that is very fair. It is causing trouble with the turtles and we should get rid of it. And should we put it back to the way it used to be? I think your point is like, yes, this is a habitat specific zone. This island did not have these trees and these beaches were like this and these turtles crushed it.
Right.
But it just doesn't seem to me, rather, I guess I should rephrase, it seems to me this tree is being vilified here where doing the same thing elsewhere, it seems to not be a problem.
Right.
So I'm so curious, and I couldn't really dive into this, but what is the difference between natural ecosystem A and unnatural ecosystem B? Other than this tree was not initially over there, but if all the other characters are more or less the same...
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
A very curious question, Casey.
Yeah, I'm very curious about it.
And I know you haven't really landed on an opinion, but
I don't.
We're going to have to.
Oh, shit.
Because after these ads, we're giving a review of this tree.
Alex.
All right, we'll be right back with our review of the beach she-oak. It doesn't really roll off the tongue, does it?
It doesn't. It really doesn't, doesn't it? You know? In fact, every time you say it, it sounds like you're describing an oak as a beachy oak.
Beachy oak.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this is a beachy oak. I'm like, oh, yeah, it is a bit beachy, isn't it? It's like, no.
Yeah. All right, we'll be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we talked about the beach she-oak, a.k.a. the Australian pine, and the loggerhead turtles, Casey.
Yeah, we sure did. Habitat destruction brought on by, I suppose, someone's bright idea.
Yeah. Hey, Casey, we have to give a review of this tree.
All right. I'm into that.
Here's how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. I think we should also maybe give a little side rating to loggerhead turtles.
Oh, to loggerheads. All right. Yeah, I can do that. Okay,
Casey, as our resident expert, we'll begin with you.
All right. So here's my thought. I think this tree is, I think it's a cool tree because it does a lot of cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool because it does nitrogen fixation, which I think is pretty cool. I think it's interesting. I like that it grows just about anywhere. It's a tree that you're like, man, I'm in this place and I have nothing that wants to grow here. What is there anyone who could volunteer? And your beech she oak is going to be like, yeah, I'll do it. I'm here to help. Great firewood. It is known apparently as the best firewood in the world.
It's so dense.
It's so dense and like very good at making like charcoal. Like apparently it's just super high quality, high BTU firewood.
Interesting.
So that's great. It's been used in Australia by the Aborigines as the bark as a canoe. So it's got its uses. It obviously is protected in certain places because of the ecological niche that it fills in Australia specifically is one thing that I read. Other than that, everywhere else outside of that native area, it's a scourge.
Yeah.
Everyone, scourge. Everyone scourge. Hates it, right? So I personally have seen this tree a few times and thought to myself, this is a messy tree. This is not a nice tree. It doesn't have a nice, beautiful form.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to grow in a way that I'm like, yeah, that's a good looking tree.
It's like a grass tree.
And it's also like a tree that is, it kind of has meshed two different things together where it's not quite conifer by any means of the definition, but it looks and acts like a conifer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a broadleaf tree because it looks and acts like a conifer, though it does have flowers and this weird cone fruit thing. So I don't know. It for me is a tree that in its native area, okay, cool, thumbs up. Everywhere else, super thumbs down.
Yeah.
And it also just, aesthetically speaking, does not choose a direction. It just tries to do everything all at the same time.
Yeah.
And I don't think it does any of them in a spectacular way.
It is a maximalist for sure, aesthetically.
Exactly. So I'm going to call it, I have straight 5.4.
Shit.
Even if this tree's doing some good stuff, it appears that it mostly does bad stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess, I don't know, like, I always like a tree that is a superlative tree. This is not a superlative tree.
Also this is like an anti-superlative tree.
It really is. Yeah, it doesn't do anything extraordinary. It just does everything kind of mediocrely.
Yeah, but like a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So it's a good generalist. You know, great. You got that going for you. But I don't know. I like the only reason it's not lower is because it does grow in places and like perform a task where other trees cannot. Maybe you're planting it in a spot that does not have turtle habitat that needs to be protected. Great. That's a perfect tree to grow in that area because it's going to do well and there's no other trees that are going to get there. Then you can cut it down and turn it into firewood. Awesome. Like, I think it's a tree that has a really good spot, a really good niche to fill and a space ecologically and culturally speaking that's very good. So I don't want to throw this tree completely under the bus, but honestly, it just doesn't really do it for me.
I get you.
And in my experience, I am like, yeah, you know what? You can go. The biggest thing, Alex, like truthfully in my heart, I want it to be a conifer. And then when I know that it's not a conifer, I'm just disappointed.
Yeah.
I'm just disappointed.
It could have achieved great things.
Yeah.
Had it just grown a fucking cone.
Hey, could you just grow a cone? That's all I'm asking.
5.4 golden cones of honor.
I'm giving it a 5.4, Alex. That's what I think.
And for loggerheads.
You know what? Because of their fun name, I'm going to give them a 6.4.
Okay.
You know why I don't give them anything higher?
Why?
Because they still dig dumb holes with their weird flippers.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you, oh my God.
It's also like such an important thing, you know? You would think they would have
figured something out.
Yeah, like improved a little over the millennia. Casey, I think the beech she oak is fine. I don't know. It's just trying too much stuff, and it's not doing any of it particularly well. Uh-huh. And it's wildly invasive.
Number one.
Although invasiveness is in itself is sort of interesting because it's so conditional, you know?
Yeah.
So if I were an Australian, it's like being born. If I'm born in Ohio,
uh-huh,
I'm probably going to end up being a Christian, you know. But if I'm born in Iraq, I'm probably going to end up being Islam.
Okay.
And both I think they're right, you know. So
So,
but if that person who was born in Iraq was born in Manhattan,
they would think differently.
Yeah. I think it's okay. I don't know. I don't have much of an opinion on this tree. I have an issue in general with trees who try a lot of different stuff and don't do any of it great, really well.
Yeah.
You know,
okay, yeah.
Like, what's more annoying than somebody who says they can do all these different things?
Yeah.
And they have, I can do massage. You need your roof retiled. I can do that. And then you hire them to do both of these things, and they suck at both. And you're
I see. You technically did it, but
you just have like this overblown idea of what you can do. That's how I feel about this tree.
Gotcha.
And then you see it perform and it's like, oh, okay. God.
Okay.
So I'm going to give it, by the way, if you're going to be a big tall tree with the hardest wood in the world, put some effort into your root system.
Yeah. Just as a side note, just pay attention to your feet.
What the hell?
I honestly, you know what I think? Most of the literature I found is all about it being a highly awful invasive tree. I could have gone way more in depth, but I do have to admit to myself and everybody else, reading too many scientific papers just numbs me to death. Ugh, and I can't do it. But there are, I'm sure, far more sources that can talk about its ecological. In fact, I have them. I just was like, I got to go look at some other things for this episode. So its native habitat, like, I bet you that it lasts and grows for way longer because its root systems have developed for that space.
Yeah.
I doubt that they just fall over so easily in their native habitats. I don't know for sure.
This comes back to, I mean, you know, it's not the tree's fault. People planted it in places where it shouldn't have been growing.
I mean, Christ, it grows to 175 feet. That can't just be something that it grows in 175 feet and it's just like, man, now I'm keeling over.
Yeah, you don't get that tall without having been through the ringer a little.
Some substantial ability to do it. Yeah. So I'd be willing to bet if we talk to some other people who are pros that don't live or have a vested interest in Florida, then we might find some different perspective.
My people.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 7.0, Casey.
7.0?
Yeah.
Wow, you went higher than I expected.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like being too mean to it.
All right, that's fair. I'll take the heat.
Yeah. It's like that person who, you know, the same person who offers to massage and change your and retile your roof.
Uh-huh.
You're not going to like yell at them. They're just like delusional.
You're like, "Well, I knew what I was getting myself into."
Yeah.
I don't blame you. I hired you because you were cheap.
And then they ask you to stow their car in your garage and you're like, I can't do that for you. I'm sorry.
I have too many things.
Casey, that was our review of the Beech She Oak. It is time for the completely arbitrary Q&A.
That's what I'm talking about.
This week's question comes from Katsumi Kurochi. Katsumi asks Casey, "Hiya."
Hey there, everybody.
Hey.
I guess we're talking to one person here.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Say it's the dawn of a new era on Earth.
Oh.
500 million years have passed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Evolution has progressed to the point of creating the megaflora.
500 million years?
Yes.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Might be overshooting.
That's a lot, yeah.
Evolution, but this is a hypothetical.
I think that takes us all the way back like to the the Ordovician, something like that.
Evolution has progressed to the point of creating the megaflora.
The megaflora.
What would the conditions need to be to create 200 meter tall trees?
200 meter.
And what Casey is just fundamentally has a problem with this question. And what megaflora trees would be present in each biome?
Whoa.
So let's imagine the Pacific Northwest, because we're biased.
Whew.
Imagine a 200 meter tree that is 600 feet.
Yep, 656 according to my calculations.
There you go. What would the conditions need to be, Casey? Really stretch your imagination here.
Yeah.
For a 650 foot tree to exist. Okay. As far as we know, the tallest tree to ever live is what, like 300 and some?
About 400.
400? Yeah. Okay. So this is 200 feet plus higher than the tallest tree to ever exist.
Ooh, okay. So stability. We need to have stability.
Okay.
So I say stability in that there can't be like wild swings in temperature and weather patterns and things like that.
Not just physical stability.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. This would be like a very stable ecosystem.
Yeah.
So over these 500 years, things would need to develop.
I'm sorry,
500 million. Oh my God. They would need to develop in a way that has not changed for like 100 million of those years, where everything's been exactly the same. And I say exactly, but maybe just they change so positively slowly, but not enough to be so vastly different from where they were previously.
Okay.
That the trees that have developed this mega flora, all the rest of these plants, it shouldn't be just trees. We shouldn't just pin it there. This is 500 million years in the future.
Probably plenty of ferns out there.
Yeah, exactly. So it would need
to be. And the ant people rule the world.
As they do today. Don't question ants. Uh-huh. They'll bite you. So it would need to have this amount of stability, right? So the things that we're developing, they're like, okay, I'm going to grow an inch taller. And then the next one's like, oh, I'm going to grow a foot taller. Mm. And it can do those things and not get knocked back.
Sure.
Essentially not be like, well, that was a complete failure, and then die and then have another tree grow up. It would need to be stable enough that the trees know exactly what they're dealing with and they know exactly what to expect.
And extremely slow and steady.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
So it would also need to be, I think, warm and filled with carbon dioxide.
Sure.
Because those are the things that really get things to be, you know, moving. And all the right conditions would need to be essentially as it used to be when like the whole world was more or less tropical, where there's, you know, we have now very deep soils. In another 500 million years, our soils will get nothing but deeper. But we'll need to have no volcanoes and no gigantic things that are affecting this, like tsunamis, you know, stuff like that.
Glaciers.
Yeah, exactly. So glaciers are gone. We've now had all of our climate changes is happened. 500 million years. Don't worry about it.
Oh, right. That's so far that it's like we've gone through several cycles.
Yeah. Our evolution will have already passed into something completely different. There, like 500 million years ago, Alex, there were like maybe pre-squids and like little clam-like things and algae.
Pre-mammal.
Pre-everything. I think almost pre-insect. Like,
wow.
there were arthropods, but they lived in the ocean. Plants had not yet come onto land.
Cool.
Yet. So that's the kind of timeline we're talking about.
Gotcha.
So the soils would have to be big and deep, and the root systems of the trees would need to be able to go down. So there has to be plenty of water, but also enough rock and stability that they can send down some big roots and have something that is stable that they're working in as a substrate.
Okay.
And I think they also need to be in big forests, and the carbon is what's going to help with this. They need to get huge. Like, they need to have bases that are tens and tens and tens of feet around. Like the, what's a tree? The Thule tree, our Montezuma cypress.
Yeah.
That mixed with a giant sequoia in terms of height. But that all put together with a, say, redwood or another eucalyptus kind of tree that is very, very strong, but very bendable.
So this can't be a pencil thin, mile high.
I don't think so. No, I think it has to have some substantial width to it.
Cool.
To be able to take, you know, those things. It also needs to be very decay resistant. They need to have evolved beyond the decay causing organisms.
I honestly think at this point, we're not even talking about a tree. I think it's going to have to be like the next evolution of an X tree.
Yeah, it's going to be. So what is that? The difference of proto? So proto is like pre. So X is that afterwards?
Oh, like I'm thinking. I'm thinking of like X-Men.
Oh,
or like X-Men are like the next species of human. You know?
Ooh, yeah.
Or
so maybe
Homo, whatever. They're
maybe that would be it. Yeah. Maybe you're onto something there, Alex. It would be like a tree that has other ferns and things, where the tree itself becomes the ecosystem, yeah. becomes the ground.
Yeah.
So as it's growing, things are growing on it, but also with it.
Yes.
So that it itself is like this completely connected thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's actively resisting decay, growing bigger. Wherever it can make energy, it's making energy. But everything else has a stake in it making yes. energy and not falling over. So you have this reinforcing of the ecosystem.
And it has its own mycorrhizal network just in that single
exactly.
tree.
Exactly. Yeah. By that point, theoretically, the mycorrhizal network and the tree will just become one.
Cool.
Similar to how we have leaves
yes.
and chloroplasts,
yes,
right?
Yes, totally. Yeah.
So now the mycorrhizal network will be so involved
wow.
where we won't even be able to tell the difference. We'll just be able to say, well, yeah, well, these are two, these maybe used to be 500 million years ago, two different things.
And leaves now look like mushroom caps.
Exactly. Yeah. They're all doing the same thing. You know, there's maybe mushrooms that are growing in the leaves to get more water into the leaves directly. The roots are now essentially old news. No one needs the roots to get water. We just take it right from the environment because
yeah.
that's what our fungal associates are for.
That's smart.
Wow, that's
how
such
fun.
A fun question. I think, honestly, I think you're exactly right. I think having like a full ecosystem of a tree,
mm-hmm.
that's the future. There's not, it's not going to be a tree. It's going to be like, yeah, this is, this, there's not even, I don't know.
It'll,
what
it'll
is
be
the
called
term?
Something else.
Yeah, tree is going to be just a descriptor.
It's almost like a city in the sky.
Yeah.
Cloud city.
Wow.
And at the very top, Lando Calrissian.
Lando motherfucking Calrissian. He's going to be up there. He's going to be chilling with his hot mustache. Yeah.
And his capes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Katsumi, for your question.
What a fun question.
Yeah, I love those kind of philosophical brain teasers.
500 million years is so long.
If you've got a question for us, Casey's over there having an existential crisis.
Yeah.
Join the Patreon at the $3 Q&A tier. Of course, if you want to support this podcast at all, the Patreon is a great place to do it. Patreon.com/arbitrarypod. There's a bunch of different tiers for a bunch of different price points. It's a monthly subscription. You get bonus episodes. You can join the Cone of the Month Club and get monthly cone stickers. This month is still in the works because I got a little behind, Casey,
with
my bout of COVID.
Yes.
I fell behind a little bit.
Well, it's going to be good, whatever it is.
Whatever it ends up being, it's going to be great. It may be something that I draw myself.
No way.
I honestly want to, Casey.
That would be so much fun, Alex.
Should we do that?
I have no idea. Sure, I don't care.
Let's do it.
Yeah, draw a cone. Well,
okay.
Everyone, join the Patreon to hear us discuss which cone and why.
Oh, fun.
Alex is going to choose.
I love this. And
sweet.
No, it's I'm not going to do the Alex thing and choose like an ice cream cone or something.
Oh,
or
yeah,
traffic
no, we
cone.
Can do that. Yeah.
I'll be legit.
All right.
That is the Cone of the Month Club. It's on our Patreon. Above that, of course, is Arbitrary Plus. You can get live streams every month where you can join in, and Casey and I will talk to you on the chat. And
right.
it's a lot of fun. We got a tight little crew there that show up every week, every month. Above that is generous admission.
Mm-hmm.
Starts at $20 a month, but it can go up to whatever you feel like supporting the podcast with. Every dollar goes back into making this podcast, and the you know, keep quite literally keeping the lights on, Casey.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Casey, clap.
Well done, Alex. This is
well
a fun
done.
Conversation.
Yeah,
I don't
really get time.
I don't know where I stand right now. I really don't. This tree's it's an enigma for me.
Yeah.
It's an enigma.
You know, I just watched Batman Forever. Terrible little movie.
Huh.
And, you know, Jim Carrey is in that. He plays the Riddler.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I was reminded by this movie that the Riddler's, like, you know, civilian name, his Christian name, is Edward Nigma.
Edward
E. Nigma.
Yes.
And I thought you would have loved that.
I do love that.
But my eyes rolled back in my head so hard.
Oh, so good. But that movie came out like the 90s, right?
Yeah. 95, I think.
That makes sense. This all makes sense.
Casey, I forgot to give my review to Loggerhead Turtles.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry, Alex. What do you got?
10 out of 10.
And the podcast. We can't do this.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Didn't even give us a good idea. So why? Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening. Night.